Okay, good morning, everyone. Shalom aleichem. Welcome back. Five to go. Parshas Truma, 5, 7, 8, 4. Vasuli mikdash v'chachanti besocham. We learn here about the map, the architecture, the beautiful structure, the commandment to build a house for the Ribono Sheolam, for Kadosh Baruch Hu. The past few weeks, we've been mentioning the order of the parshios, and here also there's very important machlokas. Where is Parshas Truma in the chronological order of the Torah? According to Rashi, Parshas Truma takes place after Chet Egel. Right? In this Machlokas, Rashi, we'll see the Ramban, really shapes and frames the commandment to build the Mishkan in a very different way. According to Rashi, this happens after Chet Egel. After Chet Egel, Hashem realizes, right, that the people need a place, a makom in this world, an edifice that represents Hashem. They've made significant mistakes. And as a result of that, they need Hashem, ki'ilu, lahavdil, closer to them in the midst, right? It's almost like a bidi'eved situation, according to Rashi. The Ramban writes, he actually has a very short introduction to the Parsha where he discusses this, is that the goal of the Mishkan was always intended to be there. There always was the intention that there should be a Mishkan following Matan Torah. And just like we have a Matan Torah that was once in a lifetime experience, it was a singular moment in Jewish history, so too we have the Mishkan that continues that inspiration of Matan Torah. And he goes on to explain how a lot of the similarities from Matan Torah play itself out in a lot of the rules and the regulations about the Mishkan itself. For example, the Aron is in the middle. For example, Moshe was only allowed to go up on top, and then there were the Zakenim, Aron and Hur, and Yoshua were allowed to go in certain parts of the mountain. So too, there are only the Kohen Gadol can get completely inside. The Kohanim can go a little bit closer, and Yisraelim a little bit further away. V'chulei v'chulei. There was a Mizbeach after the Matan Torah with Korbanos. Now we learned at the end of Parshas Mishpatim. So too, we have two Mizbachot over here as well. So he says that the role and the goal of Matan Torah was really to maintain the kedusha and the memories of Matan Torah and to bring it into the everyday. That's really the goal. The Ramban elsewhere writes that we also have something that we do every single day that also maintains this, and that is Kriyas HaTorah. Kriyas HaTorah, he writes, the goal of Kriyas HaTorah is to create a Sinaitic experience a few times a week. And in fact, is an amazing remez. It's an amazing remez to every single time we read Kriyas HaTorah. The Chasam Sofer says that what are we giving? It's funny that the Parshas Truma mentions first, oh, what items do we need? We need Zahav, the Chesef, gold, silver, and copper, and then we need other things. He says, Zahav is Zayin Hey Vase. Zayin, all these are allusions to the times that we read the Torah throughout the year. Zahav is, se sorry, Zayin is seven. That's Shabbos. Read the Torah on Shabbos. Hey and Vase is a reference to Thursday and Monday. You read the Torah. Yom Chamishi, Yom Sheni, just like this morning. Kesef, Kaf, that's Yom Kippurim. Samech, what is Samech? That is Sukkos. Kesef, the pay is Pesach. Nechoshes, right? Pesach is, sorry, Pesach and Purim. Nechoshes, the nun is Neros, which is a reference to leaning on Chanukah. Ches is Chodesh, Rosh Chodesh. Shin of Nechoshes is Shavuos and Shmini Atzeres, and then the Tav of Nechoshes is tainus, is a fast day. So you see there referenced, it's a great remez, referenced within the giving and the items that were used to create the Mishkan is a remez to all the days that we read the Torah and from the Chasam Sofer. So it might be related to this idea from the Ramban, that if the whole idea, the whole goal of Kriyas Torah is to keep this inspiration of Matan Torah. Very often on a Monday and Thursday, we have our gabbai here for the 745 minyan, Sam Heller. So sometimes there's nobody on the other side. That the gabbai stands on one side of the bima, and we're makbid to have somebody else on the other side. She'll tell me, "Oh, you know why you do that? Because you need the guy to, you need a second hand. Like the gabbai can't do everything. He's got to call the people up. And someone else has to like cover the Torah in between." Yeah, sure. There's a practical reason for it, but there's an additional reason for it. The halacha svarim, right, is that you need two people there. Why? Moshe ve'Aaron, right? You need two people there. The person laning represents Hashem reading the, right? Or, and then you have two people to the side, Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron HaKohen. And that's why there's a hakpada to have two individuals there to keep that inspiration going in our lives. Okay, that is thought number one regarding the order of the parashios, and in addition, that amazing reference to all the times that we lain from the Torah. We continue on in learning the items that were used to donate to the Mishkan. We have Zahav, Kesef, and Nechoshes, then Tchelas, Argaman, V'Tolat Sheni, V'Sheish, V'Izim. We need certain types of materials and colors. Tcheles is some type of bluish. Argaman is purple. Tolat Shani is crimson wool. Vishesh Vizim, and they come from different types of animals. Ro'ros Eli Ma'adamim, Ro'ros Techashim, Atzei Shitim. And then we need skins and hides from Elim, from rams. And from Tachashim, which is a unique, singular type of animal that only was around in the times of the Mishkan. Atzei shitim, we need acacia wood. Shemen lama'or, besamen l'shemen ha'mishka. Ulektores ha'samim. Then we need oil, spices for the ktores and for the shemen ha'mishka. And lastly, we need precious gems. We need the avnei shoham and the Avnei Miluim, La'ifod V'Lachoshen. We need precious jewels for the ephod and for the choshen. The ephod was the shoulder strap that the Kohen Gadol wore. It had two precious stones on them. And the choshen was the breastplate, which had approximately, not approximate, it's machlokas, but about 12 stones representing the different tribes. It could be other, you shouldn't say maybe it's a few more than 12, but at least 12. Good. The Or Chaim HaKadosh asks the following question. If you follow the supplies that are needed, right, it begins with gold, silver, and copper, and then goes into different threads that are needed, skins, oil, spices, and then it goes to precious stones. He says the order is not right. Things seem to be out of order. They start with the things that are most expensive, and then it goes down. Perfect. Makes a lot of sense. Have the big asks first, and then go down in the order. Why is the Avnei Miluim and the Avnei Shoham last? Why are they last? Those should be at the top of the list. Those were also very expensive and very precious and very rare. Why were those last? The Or HaChaim shares three answers. We're gonna share two today. Answer number one that we're gonna share is from the Or HaChaim. He says the following. He says, "Who gave these Avnei Shoham and Avnei Miluim? It was the Nisim." The princes of each tribe, they gave these precious gems. When did they give these precious gems? At the end. See, the Nisim heard about the commandment to build a Mishkan, just like everybody else. And they said, you know what? We're going to wait. Let everybody else donate. And if you still have, you know, you don't have enough money, we'll fill in the gap. We'll write a check for the rest. So if you're asking me, that sounds like a great, anybody want to take that offer off the table for Shomrei Torah? I am more than happy to take that offer. Chazal looked at that as a very negative thing. They looked at that and they said it was very inappropriate what they did. Why is that? On one hand, it's very beautiful. When somebody gives, right? Rabbi Reisman explains, when somebody gives to an organization that's having a fundraising campaign, you give for one of two reasons. Either you feel, without my giving, they're not going to fill their goal, and I really want to help them fill their goal, which is amazing. It's amazing. There's another reason why you give. They're going to make their goal, because a lot of the people, they do the fundraising behind the scenes, and they want to fill in the gap a little bit. They're going to make their goal. I believe in their vision. I believe in their dream so much that I just want to have a chelak in it. No matter how much I give, I want to have a piece in it. The Nesi'im, they could have said both. We're going to give a little bit. You know why? Because we believe so much in what's happening right now. We believe in creating a home for Kaddish Baruch Hu, a place for the Jewish people to go to be inspired, to be uplifted. That they didn't give into. That's what Chazal saw as a slight to the Nesi'im. Later on, they gave the Avdei Shom Navi Miluim. And that was, so it's last on the list. A little bit of a patch to them to remind us that, sure, it's amazing. It's unbelievable, really is, to say I'm going to write the check for the rest. But commit to that right away. Commit to it right away. Or give a little bit immediately. Say, I'll give whatever else you need at the end. Answer number one of the Or Chaim. Second answer for today comes from the Or Chaim. Also, really comes from a Gemara, Maseches Yuma. The Gemara Yuma says that where do they find these precious gems in the Midbar? They came out of the clouds. The clouds carried the Jewish people and followed the Jewish people and protected them in the Midbar. They found them coming out of the clouds, meaning these came straight from the Ribono Shel Olam. These gems were almost a gift from Hashem. They came last. Because ultimately, when they were donated to the Mishkan, they were given without any hard work. There was no self-sacrifice in giving of these specific items. Therefore, they are given last. What are we highlighting here? We're highlighting that the notion of giving, right, klapei shamayim, when it comes to Hashem, is based on how much of a sacrifice it is for one to be in a position to give. It's not how much we give, but it's about the sacrifice that is made through the giving itself that is highlighted here in the Torah. Rabbi Fran elaborates on the Or Chaim. He writes, a poor person's $18 check to tzedakah that cuts into his monthly budget can easily outweigh a six-figure donation that is pocket change to a fabulously wealthy man. But in the eyes of Hashem, both might be the same. And he says that he read an article that appeared in a Vilna newspaper, right? The newspaper of Vilna, describing the Chanukah Sabbais of a yeshiva built in Kletsk. Kletsk was a city in Lithuania where Rav Aaron Cutler was a Rosh Yeshiva. Before Rav Aaron Cutler came over to build Lakewood, he was a Rosh Yeshiva in a city called Kletsk. And they had a major Chanukah Sabbais in the yeshiva there. And they had a parade that went from Rav Aaron Cutler's house to the yeshiva. And there were several gedolim that were there at the time. His father-in-law, Rav Yisrael Zalman Meltzer, was there, who eventually ended up in Eretz Yisrael. Rav Chana Wasserman, Rav Shimon Shkap, and many other gedolim were there to celebrate this new yeshiva. Rav Aaron was very young at the time and was known as an Eloi, like a major prodigy in Torah at the time. And when they came to the yeshiva, right, what did they do? All these Rosh Yeshiva stood up on the bima and they said, who would like to donate to the yeshiva? And people would come up and donate. Like, you know, we used to do with the cards, and people would say, oh, and you'd announce people's names. So they'd announce somebody's name, how much they would give, and they would give this person a Mishaberach. And the article writes about how women were also included in this, that women also were had the ability to go up to the front and share with the Rosh Yeshiva their amounts, and they would also get. And the reporter shares that an elderly woman shuffled her way up to the bima, and with a trembling hand and a tear streaming down her wizened face, offered a modest donation to the yeshiva, a mere few kopecks. The reporter writes how inspired he was to see the joy and emotion radiating from her as she participated in this historic event. Watching her, he wrote, you imagine that these weren't mere rubles or zloty coins she was donating, but gleaming diamonds and pearls that stem from the soul of the Jewish nation. He concludes by writing, Rabbi Friend, whether in the times of the Mishkan or pre-war Kletzk or modern-day fundraising drives, it's not the amount that makes a donation significant in heaven, but the self-sacrifice and heart that accompanies the donation. And that is why the Avnei Shoham and the Avnei Milu were mentioned last in the counts. That reminds us and should inspire us that when there's a mission that we believe in, we should be of the first that give and not wait till the end. We're not moving on in the pasuk, but we're moving on into our third idea for this morning, which is the Avnei Shoham and the Avnei Miluim. So I don't know what a Shoham is, but it's a precious stone. Avnei Miluim is a very funny language. What does Avnei Miluim mean? It's a
Filling
stone that is, what do you say, Shira?
it. Like filling in, maybe.
Filling in. So
I don't know.
it doesn't describe, right? Precious stone is a diamond or a ruby. It has a name. Why doesn't the Avnei Miluim have a name on its own? What does that reflect about the Avnei Miluim itself? So Rashi, there's a machlokes here between Rashi and the Ramban as to what exactly this means. Rashi writes that the Choshen was made with 12 depressions inside on the breastplate. And these stones filled in those spaces. And that's why it's called Avnei Miluim. Limalot means to fill in, right? And that's the definition of it. That's why it's there. The Ramban disagrees. The Ramban writes the following. He says, well, the Ramban's kashya is, isn't that true also about the ephod? The Avnei Shoham, which were the stones that were put on the ephod, were also made with a depression. So how come those also weren't called Avnei Miluim as well? And he asks a few other questions. The Ramban therefore argues that when it comes to, you know, cutting these stones and making them the right size, we know that when it comes to the stones of the Mizbeach, we couldn't use any metal to cut them. How do we cut the stones? We needed to use something supernatural, a shamir. There was a special type of worm that was used. So he says that the Avnei Miluim come from the word male. They needed to be whole. They couldn't be cut unnaturally. The Avnei Shoham could be cut unnaturally with whatever tool you needed to use to fit that into the shoulder, on the shoulders. But the Avnei Choshen, the Avnei Miluim used for the Choshen needed to be shalem when they were used. Therefore, they are called Avnei Miluim. Very important machlokes in terms of how we understand these two approaches. The Maharal Miprag has a third approach. He says, you know how like the diamond makes the ring? You know, like if you have a ring, but there's no stone on it, okay, it's a ring. But when there's a diamond there, that It makes it that much more special. So he writes that the Avnei Miluim, without the Avnei Miluim there on the Choshen is almost like nothing. It's not, it's almost insignificant. But the Avnei Shoham for on the Ephod was significant on its own. And it didn't fill up the entire Ephod as opposed to the Choshen. Therefore, its definition was Avnei Miluim because of the way that it filled in the gap in a much more significant way. But going back to Rashi for a moment, I saw a beautiful thought building off of Rashi from Rabbi Bender. Avni Miluim, right? We still didn't answer our question. They're called the filling up stones, right? The Ramban didn't like that. The Ramban said it's not the filling up stones. It's the stones that are male, they're whole. Or the stones that make the Choshen beautiful, that is the Maharal. What's the significance of Rashi's interpretation that they're filling up stones? So he quotes the Rosh Hashiva from the Mir, Rosh Shmuel Birnbaum. He says that whatever intrinsic value and beauty these stones had is secondary to the value of the fact that they filled the hole of another. There was a gap waiting to be filled, and these stones moved in and filled that void. There's no greater compliment according to the standards of the Torah. We can all have amazing attributes, amazing character traits. We can accomplish a tremendous amount in our lives. He says the way that we're ultimately defined is the way that we help others by filling in gaps waiting to be filled in and helping others. Shmuel was saying, the role I play in the lives of others is what gives me my identity. The Avnei Miluim, the identity of these precious stones, is not what they're called. We'll learn about what they're called exactly and precisely later on in Parashat Tetzaveh. But the Begadol, I am defined about how I fill in the gaps of other people. That's what gives me my identity. And he tells a very, very touching story about Rav David Feinstein, Zatzal. A bunch of years ago, I don't know, it was 10 years ago, maybe a little bit longer, Rav Aaron Lim Steinman from Bnei Brak came to America to inspire Klal Yisrael. And one of the stops was in Brooklyn at somebody's home. And at that home, they hired a photographer to come to the home to take pictures with every single person that was visiting the Gadol. And at the end, and each person would go in privately. This individual would take one picture with the Gadol. He would leave the room because they would talk privately. And then he would go out. At the end of the night, it was like very, very clear that the photographer himself wanted to have time with the Gadol Hador. But what was the problem? He needed somebody, right, to hold his camera. And the photographer froze, like, this is like thousands of dollars. Who am I going to give this to? Rav David Feinstein, right? Immediately turned around, like naturally. Just naturally turned around. I got it. Here, let me take your things. I'll hold it. He probably even took a picture for the individual. And he went in. The Avni Miluim are the most precious stones are referred to by what they do for others. Right, this is maybe why this is part of the generosity of the Mishkan. The Mishkan is defined, people that give to the Mishkan are people that are in the divei lev, that naturally want to give to the Jewish people and to help Klal Yisrael. Rav David Feinstein was one of those individuals that wasn't Avnei Miluim. We have to think about in our lives, how do we fill in for others in our lives? Okay.
Rabbi.
Yes, Nathan.
Miluim, does that have anything to do with the IDF reserves?
It's also called Miluim. Okay, what Russia could we make there? Nathan, I like this.
So I'm just questioning, is that the same word? Is the same assurance?
I think it is. No, Miluim. Yeah. No, Jay?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
They fill in.
They fill in. They fill in. They fill in the gaps. They help out. Yeah, 100%.
So they're still, that word is still in effect and used today.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Okay, I didn't think about that. I like that idea. We have to think of, there must be something very profound there. I can't think of it right now. But Nathan, you'll call me later. You'll come up with an idea, or anyone for that matter. Okay. We continue on with the first one of the Kalim that is mentioned that we must build is the Arun. Vasu li, Vasu Arun, Atsheshitim, Amasayim v'chetzi Yerko, Vama v'chetzi Rechbo, Vama v'chetzi Kol Matso. You have to make an Arun out of acacia wood. It was gold on, there was three boxes. Gold, gold and gold. Nah. The outside and the inside, and the middle was acacia wood. We discussed in years in the past why it was like that. Talmud Chacham needs to be the outside, need to reflect the insides, and vice versa. We need to be genuine and real people. And what we say is what we feel and what we mean. One additional idea is that many of the Mefarshim point out here that all the measurements of the Aron are halves. Amasayim v'chetzi orko, 2.5 is its length. Vama v'chetzi rachbo, 1.5 amos is its width. Vama v'chetzi komaso, and its length is 1.5 as well. Says Rav Sternbach, what is the message of these measurements?
That's an easy one.
Yeah, what do you think, Shira? What do you think?
Nobody is complete without others.
Okay, very nice. Nobody is complete without others. Similar to like the chatzi shekel, right? We give a shekel. Usually, parshas or shkalim is mishpatim time. But since it's a leap year, we have a little bit of time to get to mishpatim, a few weeks. I had to get to Shkalim, but the very similar idea. No one's complete. Our Torah is not complete without a chavrusa, without learning with other people. We can't make the Torah on our own. We have to have other people to complete the Torah. Very nice.
Well, Shani Lani, you know.
I can't keep the Torah to myself. I have to share it with others. Amazing. Any other thoughts? Why is all the midos, all the amounts in halves? So says Rav Schnurbach, a different idea. He says that when it comes to spirituality, we need to always look at ourselves as if there's always more to do. And he says a very nice remez for this. The pasuk says, Bashamayim Mima'al, Bal Aretz Mitachas. Right? Hashem is Hashem in the Shemayim above and in the Aretz below. He says, Bashamayim Mima'al. When it comes to thinking heavenly, Mima'al, there's always more to do. There's always more goals that we could set for ourselves. There's more aspirations that we could have. So when it comes to Artius, when it comes to maybe, you know, the Gashmius world, when it comes to physicality, we should try to mitachas. We have enough. We have enough where we are right now. And that maybe is the message here, that all of the halves of the Torah, they're all in halves, that there's always more for us to do. When it comes to Torah, when it comes to Torah, we want to try to always try accomplish more. In our doesn't only mean Talmud Torah; it means in our midos, in our tefillah, in our observance of halacha. To try to always, you know, we're never always complete. There's always more we can do. And so we began today with discussing the order of the Parshios, Ramban, Rashi, and what that means for us today. Where is our Mishkan today? It could be Kriyas HaTorah is our Mishkan, our Beis HaMikdash, our Shuls are our Mishkans, our homes are our Mishkans. Second was the Or Chaim HaKadosh about the orders of the Avnei Shoham and Avnei Miluim, why they last. Third, we discussed why the Avnei Miluim are called the Avnei Miluim, Machlokes, they are Rashi, Ramban, and the Gur Aryeh. Fourth idea is from Rashturmbach and Shirazel as to why we have halves, right? Either we can't, we're not complete on our own, or and we need others, or we, when it comes to our spiritual growth, we always need to be grown. Last idea comes from the Tiv HaTorah, Rav Gamliel Rabinovich. He points out that we have, the Mishnah in Avos says, there are three crowns. Shlosha Kesarim Heim. This comes from Shmuel Bar Yochai. We have the Keser Torah, Keser Kahuna, and Keser Malchus. And the Kli Yakar says this is referenced to in our Parsha. Why is that? We have the, there are two items in the Mishkan that needed a Zer, Zayin Resh, a Zer Zahav Saviv, almost like a train of gold that surrounded the entire item. One was the Aron, had a Zer Zahav Saviv. And the second one was the Shulchan, had a Zer Zahav Saviv. Both, right, represent two different types of, they look like a crown. It's like a crown around, it circled the entire item, Shulchan and the Aron, and it looked like a crown. The third crown that we have is the Kohen, wears a mitznefes. That's like a crown, which symbolizes these three crowns that we have, the Keser Torah, Keser Kahuna, and Keser Malchus. The Rabbi Galil Rabinovich takes this one step further. He says, now, when it comes to Keser Kahuna, right, if you, one of these three is not like the other. If you haven't watched Sesame Street in a while, you'll maybe remember. So Kahuna is very different than the other two. Kahuna, I don't work hard to become a Kohen. Even if I worked really hard to become a Kohen, tough luck. I can't be a Kohen. It's only if you're born into it. You could lose Kahuna maybe, but you can't, either you have it or you don't have it. You're born into it. How do you achieve Keser Torah and Keser Malchus? So he says that both of these require a tremendous amount of work. A tremendous amount of work. He says, now when it comes to Keser Torah, you know, I don't need to tell you that when, if you really want to become somebody that is deeply rooted in Torah and very knowledgeable in Torah, we need to work hard. It's not going to happen on its own. It's not, can't flip a switch. We need to work hard with Amelus. And today, fighting all of our, you know, distractions in the world makes things much, much more difficult. So that requires a tremendous amount of hard work to achieve the Keser Torah. He says, what is the milchama of Keser Malchus? Malchus doesn't necessarily mean Malchus in terms of becoming a king or a queen. No, no, no. Malchus, who did I hear this from? Rav Avishai David. I think this is really what Rav Gamliel Rabinovich is saying, that Malchus means that everything that I do, every action that I do is thought of beforehand. I don't do things without intention. I'm extremely intentional in my life. This is symbolized by the Zer Zahav Saviv of the Shulchan. He says, this is when we overcome achila, eating. Gam bishas achila yeshna mechama gedola. There's a tremendous amount of work that we need to do when it comes, not everybody, but maybe a lot of people, when it comes to fighting our Yetzirah, when it comes to eating, not just when it comes to overeating or eating the wrong things, but even the way that somebody eats. I remember sitting with the Biyana Rebbe. He won't eat. He won't bend into his food. He brings his food to him. Okay, maybe it's going to spill. I get nervous, but brings his food to him. It's a certain level of refinement on, do we live to eat or do we eat to live? And he says that there's a story from one of the Talmidim of the Baal Shem Tov, right? Many of the Talmidim of Baal Shem Tov would go to the mikvah before they davened Shacharis HaMincha. This Talmid would go to the mikvah before each of his meals. He said, when it comes to tefillah, I don't have a yetzahara to like be distracted in my davening. I naturally connect to davening. But where do I have the biggest challenge? When it comes to eating, when it comes to the meals. Zumachama yoser kasha, me'esek bedavarucha nigreda. Some people struggle mightily over this, mightily over the machama, with indulgence in foods that are allowed. Not the food, remember, we're talking about foods that are, you know, are prohibited, even within that context. And you could tell the difference between a refined individual when it comes to eating and those that are not yet there. That is symbolized, he writes, that is keser malchus, when we have control over the actions that we do. We live a life of intentionality. Okay, so that was Zer Zahav Saviv, is mentioned twice. Two Kesarim of the Keser Malchus and the Keser Torah. Why is it the Shulchan? The Shulchan is our control over our eating itself. What we put into our mouth and how we consume the food is also something that we should be intentional about. Wish everyone so we had the order of the parashios, significance of Zahav, Kesef, and the Choshes, references all the times that we learn Torah throughout the entire year. The Avni Miluim, Avni Choshen, so many messages about the Avni Shom and Avni Miluim, why they're called Avni Miluim, why they're in that specific order, the Chatzi measurements of the Torah, and we had the crowns of the Zer Zahav, of the Shulchan and of the Torah, and what the message of that was. I wish everybody a wonderful Shabbos, and everyone should hopefully stay warm.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rabbi.